Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Collective Clicks podcast. This is your host, Brandon Bateman, and today I'm joined by Sean, our account management team lead. He works with more of our clients than anybody else on the team here at Bateman Collective, and we're going to talk all about Google Ads settings. How are you doing today, Sean?
Doing pretty good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, of course. Excited to have you here again. I think you've been on a couple of the episodes of this series and added a ton of value, and today's a fun one. Although, if I don't say so myself, probably the least sexy of our topics.
That is true, but very important still.
Yes, we're going to be talking about things today where just a single button you could press in Google Ads could make the difference between absolutely amazing results and poor results. It's the kind of stuff you don't think about and you don't care about until you're on the wrong side of it and it's hurting you. So it's something that I think it's a conversation that has to be had, even if it's not the most fun stuff in the business for sure. That topic is all about Google Ads settings. And this is where all those little miscellaneous things that didn't fit into any of the other categories that we talked about are going to fall into. And we have just a couple things, so it's probably going to be a shorter episode. But like I said, everything that we're going to talk about today has a potential. If you get it right, you'll never notice. If you get it wrong, it'll destroy you. So it's important stuff. It's also, when it comes to settings, there's a little bit less room for creativity and doing magnificent things. So there's not going to be really anything in the best category, so to speak, today. Like you get it right or you don't get it right. So we're going to talk about some things, mostly just focused around some of the big things that you can mess up and go from there. Kicking us off, Sean, what's the first thing you'd like to share in terms of settings that you can get wrong?
Yeah, one, it's a really big one that it took us a minute to figure out. About a year ago, we were a little more than a year ago. We had
it was probably 2 years ago.
Oh, it's two. Wow. That's a fast time.
It's been a minute.
Yeah. It's been a while. But yeah, we had this weird, a lot of weird issues with spam where it seemed like we were just trying all these different things where spam was a frequent issue with a lot of people. And we made tons of different adjustments. We were going through every channel, just trying to figure out what was going on. And eventually we figured it out. And it was a single setting. It's just one little checkbox. Kind of like you mentioned earlier, one checkbox can make or break your campaign. It was search partners and using that network to advertise where we were Google, essentially, for those who aren't familiar with it, Google essentially has two different routes you can go. You're advertising on Google and you're also advertising on search partners, which if you're ever on sites that have like Google search integrated with their searches, or there's a large number of other browsers that use Google, but a secondary version of Google for their stuff. And advertising through that channel is bringing in tons of spam. And we figured out turning that off was actually prevented, I'd say probably like 90, maybe even more, 90% of our spam that was coming through at the time. So it was a lot. And so that's the one thing I would say, if there is a best thing, there is a best thing for this conversation, is it is not using search partners, because it's just it's the Wild West in search partners. And this is a setting you just have to go into your Google campaign settings. You can turn off, just uncheck the box for Google for search partners. But yeah, that's one of the biggest things. A lot of spam was coming through that channel, and it seems like it's probably easier. I would imagine it's easier to target through that channel for a lot of these click farms or other spam sources, things like that. But that's where I figured I'd start here, is talking about those search partners and just not utilizing it. It's very easy. Just uncheck it and just make sure you're not using it in your campaigns. For us, it seemed like it could make or break our campaigns. And it wasn't something that was always that way, though. I think that's one thing to point out, is it's something that kind of grew over time. And so it's something, and actually one thing I would say pay attention to is, if you are using search partners right now, measure what you have and check. We haven't used it for a long time just because it became a large issue. And we have had a few instances where we've tried enabling it and it just seems to produce still the same issues with spam. I think in its current state, it's just not a tool that we can really use in this industry. So I definitely recommend turning off search partners.
Yeah, absolutely. I also want to open up the conversation to a little bit of a broader view on things. And it really just comes down to click fraud in general, because I've seen a lot of people that we talk to that do have this issue with search partners. They're going about it a different way. Like, they're trying to solve that problem by blocking IP addresses and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I think it's worth us having a conversation about what different types of fraud is there, and how do you prevent those types of fraud? Because this applies even to Microsoft or Facebook as well, pretty much all online advertising. So what I would say to set the stage is that click fraud is a bigger industry than some people think it is.
It's huge.
It's one of the largest organized crimes in the world. And click fraud is basically someone else profiting by generating fake traffic. And the foundation of it usually is that Sean, for example, has this website, and this website's about whatever it's about. And he might run ads on that website, right? And by running ads on that website, you know, when I go and I click on that ad off of his website, he gets paid by the network because someone else is paying to advertise there. That's a basic foundation behind this. And that's all good until Sean decides that he has bad intentions. And he realizes that he can actually fake people being on his website and they don't have to actually be there. And those fake people, the better he can do at making them look like real people, the better he's going to do at monetizing his website with traffic that he doesn't actually have. And what do real people do? Well, they click on the ads. They don't just look at mm-hmm. them. And when they click on them, they might fill out the forms, et cetera. So they behave like normal people. But if he was faking this, he might just also fill out those forms with complete garbage information. And he might have low conversion mm-hmm. on the people that click and all that kind of stuff. So that's the foundational element here. So let's just say we're talking about Google. Google has no incentive to have any fraud on its platform because it doesn't want its advertisers to get bad results. So that's where, if this is Google itself, the only person generally you could say that stands to benefit from someone else clicking on your Google ad is not usually Google. It would have to be some other platform that's not also selling the advertising. Because when you have the same company selling the advertising and also owning the platform where the traffic is on, you don't really have these problems. But where you have the search partners, where you have Google, and then you have these third-party websites that can make money by selling that advertising to Google, and then Google sells it to you, that's where you run into issues. So that's where specifically for Google, this is search partners. Microsoft has something really similar. Facebook has something called Audience Network, which is basically the same thing. And you're going to find that there's a lot of fraud in all of those platforms because it's not actually owned by the main company. The other thing that people run into, though, is they try to attack that fraud in a different way. Really common is through IP blocking. Do you want to talk a little bit about IP blocking and, yeah. and when is that a good solution and when isn't it?
Yeah, essentially the IP blocking allows us to, for example, in Google, you can go up, I believe it's up to, 500 or so IP addresses you can go in and add and things like that. And you
it's 500, yeah.
Yeah.
You can do ranges, so you can...
You can block
100 of one if you want to.
Yep, exactly. But yeah, it's the basics of it is it allows us to make sure that the people who are seeing your ads are unique people that aren't coming through and have negative intentions. The pros of the IP blocking is exactly that. You can make sure that you have unique people coming in, filling out your forms and things like that, as well as it allows you to find anybody who was bad leads and things like that. You can pull them out of there and do what you can. It's not a perfect system. There are definitely ways around it. And I think that's something we'll talk about here in our click fraud discussion. But at the same time, Mike, it's a pretty good solution that will get the majority of people prevent issues from coming from that route. The cons of using IP, though, is actually I was talking to somebody earlier today where we were having a lot of duplicate forms coming in through their form fills and everything. But at the same time, we're like, hey, we could add these IPs in. But at the same time, that also means that if they ever want to come back, if they're not fraudulent, they can't if you're blocking someone. And so there are some downsides to it where you have to give up some potential traffic that you may have in the future that might be good because it's not a perfect system. So there are some cons there. And it's also another con with IP is a lot of click farms and things like that. They're pretty aware of how to get around it at times, which is why you have to bring in some other tools as well that automate the process because it's impossible for you to go into your campaigns and add 500 negative IPs every single day that could potentially be harmful. That's just, you don't have the time. It's not possible. There are tools and things like that. One of them we use and is called ClickCease. It's a great option. It's something that we provide for all of our clients because we understand the value of having that, where it can automate that process. It watches everybody, tracks those IPs, and I believe sometimes even reports them back to Google, trying to pursue refunds and things like that through some of the management fees for ones that do get through. So it's a nice tool that we really like, and we like to, that's why we provide it for all of our clients. But yeah, those are some of my thoughts on stuff we want to do there. And you can expound on ClickCease and stuff too.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts.
I know you do.
Yeah, I think we have to recognize what is ClickCease and what is not ClickCease. It's too often people try to solve a click fraud issue with ClickCease. It only works if their IP address is the same every time. And these people who are doing click fraud on this massive scale, they're not dumb.
Yeah.
Click farms are a thing and people know what they're doing. And usually they'll be clicking from new IP addresses every time. So you're on a wild goose chase just trying to exclude things with IP addresses. And ClickSees, if it's an actual sophisticated fraud. If it's not, then ClickSees can be effective. And this is common, like the scenario of, are my competitors clicking on my ads, right? Joe down the street, who also owns a wholesaling company, he might search and he might be like, you know what? This is going to cost Sean money if I click on this ad. And he might click a few times. So if he does that and he keeps on repeatedly clicking, then you could block his IP address. And it does work in those circumstances. But that's, in my experience, the minority, the small minority of fraud. So ClickSees, I'm trying to think, like, if I was managing my own Google ads, would I do it? I don't know. For us, it's a no-brainer across all of our client base because we build it into a process. It takes an extra however many minutes to set up for each account. We pay like $1 per client for per month for ClickSees or something.
It makes a lot of sense.
Because we have one account that's the same price as anybody would pay, but we can use it 150 times over. I don't know if I would or not. Maybe only if you have a significant problem with it. I also want to touch on the concept of repeat traffic, though, and where is that okay and where is that not?
Yeah.
For me, I would say if you're getting the same lead over and over again on Google, that could be a big red flag. On Facebook, not so much. How would you view it?
Yeah, no, I think that's a good point because on Google, you have intent-based searches, right? And so people are intentionally searching for you, whereas Facebook is the opposite, where it's more affinity-based and Facebook is more or less recommending you to someone else, whether they're looking for you or not. And so on Facebook, I think having repeat traffic is much more valuable because, I mean, we all know too, people usually don't click on the first ad they see. I'm sure we have all had that one, we could probably all think of that one company that has retargeted us for 9 months on Facebook or Instagram, and you see their ads just constantly. And while that's not necessarily what we're going for, but it does take, I think, I'd say on average with a lot of the link clicks we get on Facebook, it's usually somewhere around like the 3 or 4 range for frequency, meaning that they have seen our ad 3 or 4 times before they actually interacted with it, really. So that's another point. Like if you kick them out the first time they see the ad and they click on it and things like that, you may not get that traffic when you need it. So it is something that's definitely platform specific, and you can't just assume that they're the same because Google and Facebook interact very differently. So that's a good point.
I think the other thing is like how you're charged by that platform, right? Because let's just say Google, you're paying $50 for a click and that person clicks 5 times. That just costs you $50 for every single time that they click. So it gets really expensive, especially when you already have the lead. If you look at Facebook, a lot of people say, oh, my cost per lead on Facebook is $100. And this person filled out 2 forms. Therefore, they cost me $200. That's not exactly the case. If you were to carve them out and say, they probably saw your ad 3 to 4 times. And it probably cost you about 2 cents each time, right? Hmm. So you spent probably 8 cents advertising to that person, even though they filled out 2 forms, right? Yeah. So you can completely cut them out of your system. And you still spent pretty much the same amount of money you would have spent with them versus without them. The difference with Facebook is you buy a ton of those and then some of those actually pan through. You might spend 8 cents on each person, but you spend 8 cents on a lot of different people and then a small percentage click and then a small percentage turn into leads. But the real money being wasted is the people who don't convert, not the person who converts multiple times because that's a small minority of your spend.
Yeah, you've already paid for it, so you might as well convert it in a lot of scenarios.
Exactly.
So I think on Facebook, it usually ends up being more of an annoyance problem if your team is getting annoyed with receiving duplicate leads or multiple leads, things like that, that are from the same person. You have to measure, like, is it really worth cutting this out just because we're annoyed by it? And I think that very much applies to Facebook because you've already paid for it. You might as well convert it.
We had clients that get a Facebook lead and then 3 months later, they get that same Facebook lead through retargeting. And that second time, it's a deal.
Yeah. I've had that happen even like 1-2 years out.
Yeah. And it's yes, you got the same lead twice, but the fact that they filled out the form again, re-demonstrated their intent, right? Mm-hmm. It told you we need to reactivate this lead. And you should be following up with them anyways, but it tells you that like they're in market right now. And you're always going to have that one person who filled out your form like 10 times over the course of 2 months. Like there's, that always happens, but like I said, the real thing is it unique clicks or not, and is it on Google or Facebook? Because if it's Facebook, I wouldn't worry about it. If it's Google, look, did they click once and they're filling out the form over and over again, which I've seen happen.
That does happen. People bookmark those forms all the time.
I don't know what happens, but I had one client where they had like past employees that were like trying to mess with them, and they just kept on doing it, and he was freaking out like, oh, I'm spending all this money on this every day. When they clicked once and then they kept on filling out the form, I don't know if they thought filling out the form damaged him or what, but like it was a single click that produced all of those form fills. Yeah. So it doesn't make a difference. So anyways, but if it's like a unique click over and over again on Google, that's where you run into a real problem. And then sometimes there's fraud issues that pop up that are just weird. You want to talk about Wiley, Texas, our good friend there.
Yeah. No, there's a dude in Wiley, Texas that has failed. I'm pretty sure nearly everyone we worked with in like the Dallas, Fort Worth metro.
And even national clients that just have like
nationwide clients who just have Texas in their targeting, which is most of them. They've all gotten this guy in Wiley, Texas that just fills out, and he's been doing it for years. And it seems like a real person. It's not from everything that I've looked into. It's not a click farm. It's not a spam. It's just from everything I could tell. It's just a guy who no one's been able to figure out whether he has harmful intentions of just trying to waste money or if he's just some crazy dude in Wiley, Texas. But it's definitely a situation where that's a type of fraud that you have to deal with sometimes. And I mean, to your point of how much that actually costs, like overall, even out of all the clicks and forms that he's filled out, he's probably cost all of these people in total $50. It's really cheap, doesn't cost a lot, but there are definitely some unique scenarios like that. And I'm sorry, remind me what your question was.
Why did you get
backstory? It's an emotional topic for me because I've had to deal with it for so long.
Yeah. And I guess I bring this up as an example of the process you can use to get rid of fraud in Google Ads.
Yeah.
Because with this one, guess what? All those leads came from the same IP address. So we just blocked the IP address, right? Seems simple. But then they still keep on coming in through that same IP address.
Didn't work.
Right? And it's hard to say, is Google not blocking the IP address properly? Or is this person doing this IP switching technique where you search with a new IP address and then the ads load and then you change your IP address and then you click and fill out a form? Because really it's the one when they search that matters, not when they fill out the form. And usually those are the same thing, but someone could change their IP address in between those. But we had success with this just by blocking the small city. Granted, as you move to this kind of method of controlling fraud, you're also cutting out real leads.
Yeah. No, I have a client who has literally bought a house on the exact same street that this guy is on. And it was a great spread. So that's to that point, having to cut out areas like this is something that can definitely hit you negatively. So you want to be careful with it and only do it when absolutely necessary.
Yeah, that's why I would say like a first resort is avoid places that are hot on spam. Assuming you're already doing that, you want to try IP blocking. And if that doesn't work, then you can resort to doing location blocking or something like that. But it's a tricky game. All right. So taking the conversation beyond fraud a little bit, there is one other thing that Google does that I consider very sneaky. It's called auto-applied ad recommendations. So you want to give a little bit of background on what this is, why it exists?
Yeah. Basically, then in a very simple form, these are recommendations that Google's always going to recommend things. They always have some new thing that they're trying to push in their sales process. And it's more of a sales thing than actual, in my opinion, more than actual needed for your campaigns.
Especially in this industry. Because I think a lot of what they recommend is true for a lot of advertisers in other industries, but we're in a niche where a lot of that stuff doesn't work.
Yeah.
So we have to remember that. And Google's not like looking at what's working for the real estate investor clients. It's just here's, as I've seen it, there's kind of three things that these recommendations fall into. There's number one is it's something that could get you to spend more money, either through degrading your targeting, which makes you spend more money, or through raising your budget or something like that. Or it could be something that could actually help you get better results, because the better they can help you get your results, better. But not you against another advertiser. It only helps everybody get better results. If it's something that would increase, for example, the click-through rate of all Google ads.
Yeah.
Because they're not looking to uneven the playing field. They're only looking to raise it up. So if they can increase click-through rates, they're all about that. But if it's something that like is going to be more competitive from a bidding standpoint, they're not usually all about that. And then the last thing is adoption of new technology. Maybe they don't know if it works or not, but they need adoption in order to see that. This was like a really positive example of this is automated bid strategies. They were the recommendation for a long time. They didn't work really for a long time. But just the basic premise of it is it needs a lot of data to work and it's going to get a lot better over time. So if you're in Google shoes, what do? You try to convince people to use it, even though it's not that great yet, because the only way it's going to be great is that people use it. And probably due to this recommendations program, automated bid strategies today are excellent.
Yeah. It's the same reason that they pay millions and millions of dollars to have some people sit on the phone, sales guys sit on the phone and call. I get daily calls from Google. And I'm sure I'm sure everyone listening to this podcast has had at least one call of these come through where some Google Ads rep comes in saying that they know all about your campaigns, they have all these recommendations. It's just a sales guy with a big spreadsheet of everything Google's pushing at the moment and with a little bit of data from your campaign. And
sales
for the
guy,
most part,
I think, is even a little bit too generous.
Yeah, it's not even,
it's a VA.
It's a VA with a little bit of a sales commission, probably.
Yes.
So yeah, it's exactly that. And those auto recommendations there, I typically recommend don't touch them, especially if you have an agency running your ads. Don't touch them. But there are some good things. And to make it clear, like, we, as well as any other agencies, will typically be still looking at those because there are some good things that come from them. A good example is we had just set up a new client a little while ago, and we use a big list of negative keywords, but one of those negative keywords was happened to be one of those cities that they're in. And so it was not targeting that because of the negative keyword, and the automatic recommendations caught that. And I was like, oh yeah, we need to remove that. So we got that removed. And so they can be helpful and things like that. But that's also us looking at the recommendations and deciding whether to apply them or not. The auto apply just says Google ham, do what you think is best, which they don't know what's best for your market. They know what's best in a very, like you said, in a very generalist way. Honestly, it's not even them knowing what's best. It's just what data has shown them or what they're currently pursuing, but not in a niche way that you need. So it's something that I always recommend. Go look at the recommendations that they give. It never hurts to just look at them and see. It's something I always do whenever I do my deep dives. I'll go parse through them and be like, oh, is there anything good in here? But it's not something that you would just go in and buy and or go in and not buy and apply to your campaigns and let it just do what it wants, because that'll hurt you in the long run. It doesn't really know. So that's my recommendation as far as the auto applied recommendations. You always see that optimization score on your campaigns. There's two camps of marketers. Some believe that optimization score affects the algorithm. Some don't. I think I typically lean towards the side that I don't think it actually affects the algorithm and things like that. I think it's more of a sales tactic and such. I mean, we'll never know the true answer because I'm sure Google will never tell us, but
yeah,
that's where it's at.
I mean, it comes down to how do you get anybody to do anything? You start measuring what they do and you put it in front of their face.
Exactly.
That's the optimization score. It's completely made up, though.
It is.
It's arbitrary. And I found no correlation between a good optimization score and actually good. In case there's any doubt, I just want to make it extremely clear what we're talking about. Basically, there's a recommendations tab within Google. It tells you things it wants you to do. There's also settings behind that where you can tell Google that they are allowed to apply those recommendations themselves without your consent, or if they just show them to you and then you choose to do it. What a lot of people don't realize is that to stop something, you have to stop it in two places in Google. Let's just take search partners because it's a classic example, right? We had it happen where you remove search partners because you get spam, but you have allowed Google to have auto-applied recommendations, and then a recommendation comes a week later to add search partners in, and then Google automatically adds it in because it's its own recommendation. And then Google destroys your results when you decided already to not do it. So not only do you have to remove search partners, you also have to remove Google's ability to revert your own decision on that. And this could be everything from like adding new keywords, negative keywords, audiences, even writing ads for you and implementing them into your account.
Oh yeah.
Like weird stuff that can get pretty out of hand. So anyways, definitely adjust those auto apply recommendation settings. I generally say, We actually allow some of them. We have really specific criteria. If Google is adding anything that just adds more information or doesn't affect the targeting or anything like that, then we're okay with it. A good example of that is they can add like audiences to observe, because in Google, you can break down your data by different audiences. But if you don't add them in the first place, then you can't do that later.
Yeah.
So we say, Google, if you want to add an audience, sure, do it. It's never going to hurt us. But we don't let it add a keyword or
it could be messy.
A network. I also did realize one other thing that I think we skipped over a little bit before. When it comes to the network settings, we talked about Google search versus search partners. So just uncheck the box for search partners and you're probably fine. By the way, that's industry specific. It's worse in this industry than most. But
yeah, search partners does work in other places, just not in real estate.
And it's worse now than it once was.
Yes.
But there's also another one called display network. By the way, all these things that are bad that we're talking about, they're usually default settings. Like search partners and display are going to be on there by default. Auto applied recommendations is going to be there by default. You have to like know what you're doing and look for these things and remove them. That's why it's so tricky. But talk about display expansion and what that does.
Yeah. If you're not familiar with display, you've probably been on a website where they have a bunch of picture ads and it has a little down in the little corner says this is a Google ad or something like that.
This is like the classic internet advertising from like 1997.
Very 90s-esque. And yeah. But yeah, and it works in a lot of places. We specifically haven't used display a lot because we haven't seen it produce a lot of results, but display is one of those things. And to your point, this is another thing that's just on there by default. When you create a search ad, it will automatically choose to also show those search ads in display. And if you don't have any, if you don't have your ad specifically geared for display with pictures and media that you've created specifically to be displayed as an ad, Google will just take your search ad, your text, and create a little image, and it looks terrible.
Because these are different formats, right? Like, yeah, display is like an format. Animation, it's a picture, whatever.
Yeah.
Search.
All
is
different,
like,
shapes and sizes, too.
Three headlines and a description.
Yep. And that looks, for the most part, the same every time. And mm-hmm. So if you're trying to shove that into display, and I'm sure everyone's seen it, there's always been like that dentist ad or something like that you see, and it's just text. It says free cleanings, free consultations, things like that. And it just looks terrible. It's just white background with some black and blue text on it. That's what you're doing. And you're basically giving Google the opportunity to waste your money on ads like that if you don't pay attention to these settings. So I recommend if you want to be running search ads, you need to go in and turn off the display option. And if you want to utilize the display option, create a campaign for those display ads. Two separate campaigns. Don't just be lazy and allow it to run your search ads in the display option because it looks terrible. It doesn't convert well.
But the targeting's different.
Yeah, and it's completely different.
Because there's no search. So they're just guessing what you want to be targeting.
It turns into Facebook.
Yes. I think there's two problems with display. The first one is we get into this situation where the person selling the ads isn't the person who had the ad space to begin with.
Yeah.
Because Google Display Network is an affiliate network. You introduce a lot of fraud when you jump into display. And then, like you said, if you're going to run display, but don't run search and check a box for display because the targeting's not right. The ads aren't going
to
look right.
You have to check it. It's already there. Yeah. You have to uncheck it.
Yeah, exactly. I would say, we haven't had great success with it. But if we were ever to have success with it, it would not be in a search campaign. I can guarantee
absolutely
you that
not.
Yeah. It would be its own display campaign. So get rid of that for sure. Now, the good news about display. Personally, I haven't seen any campaigns where display just takes over and spends like 90% of the budget.
That's true. Yeah.
Search partners will do that. Mm-hmm. Google Display Network tends to spend like 10% of your budget. I have this like conspiracy theory that Google knows that just really doesn't work. So it's like how much budget can they put towards it before you really notice or it makes a big difference to your business? Mm-hmm. Because display inventory is like the classic, like really hard to sell inventory. And they're selling it at really high rates there because they just squeeze it in as a line item that you don't really notice. So anyways, I think because if they did have all the budget go to the display, then people would realize how bad it is and they'd cut it out from their campaign.
Yeah.
So that's my conspiracy theory about it. So this is not like a completely will destroy you conversation, but could it waste 5 to 10% of your budget? Absolutely. And that adds up.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those hidden tricks that you just have to watch for.
Absolutely.
But yeah.
Cool. We have just one last item to discuss. And this falls in settings, but I think it's a tool that's really underutilized in the industry overall, but has huge benefits.
Yeah.
And that specifically is shared budgets. So basically when you're creating a campaign, you can choose to put in there, I want to spend $100 or $150 a day or whatever the case is. There's also an option to add it to a shared budget, which if I'm being completely honest, I think I have never seen anybody else use in this particular industry.
Yeah.
Other than us. We use shared budgets all the time. Mm-hmm. I love shared budgets, but In your mind, let's just say you're going to have campaign one that spends $100 a day and campaign mm-hmm. two that spends $100 a day. Why would you have a shared budget between those of 200 instead of just having 100 for each one?
Yeah, I think a good way to illustrate this is I'm frequently in during our onboardings when we're meeting with clients, they'll frequently come to me and say, I want leads here, but I want this area, but it's not like my primary farm area, right? And I often push back on that when we start off, unless they have like really hard data and things like that. And where this ties in is when you have multiple campaigns, like everyone always has a total Google Ads budget, how much you want to spend on Google. But if you have more than one campaign, how do you know? Theoretically, yes. But yeah, if you have more than one campaign, how do you know how much budget to put in one or the other? And it's hard to really know with good accuracy how much to do that. Like you could set up two different campaigns. And let's say you have a $100 budget and you say, I'll give this one $25 and I'll give this one $75 or daily kind of thing. And so if that's the direction you're going, like, how do you know? Is that the right amount to be putting in one campaign or the other? What if one campaign spends a lot more than you anticipated and the other one doesn't? Now you're wasting time and time is money. So the benefit of the shared budget is you allow Google, you say, I have a $100 daily total budget and I have two campaigns. Google, put as much money into each one as needed. And it allows Google to help optimize that budget and make sure it's using that budget in where the best place it could be rather than you just thinking where it is. And back to my point of during onboarding, when people come in with primary and secondary locations and things like that, I pushed back on it because I was like, do you really know that's your primary? Like, how do we know that a lead here is worth more than a lead here? And oftentimes people have their own biases where they think they know the answer, but they don't really know that's the case. And using a shared budget in scenarios like that allows you to be more data-driven in that approach and allow Google to put money into places where it should or shouldn't be. And then you can control other aspects of those campaigns to determine whether leads are valuable to you or not. But a lot of people will just go in and be like, oh, I think I want $75 daily going to this metro and then $25 going to this one because it's like a tertiary area or something like that. I think that's one way you could go, but I don't think it's the best way to go. I think using a shared budget in situations like that, or another good example is branded campaigns. Branded campaigns, oftentimes you could give $1,000 a day and it'll spend 10, maybe. But now you have, or I guess as a better example, we'll stick to $100 a day, daily budget kind of thing. You give a branded campaign $100 daily and it only spends maybe $5 daily. You have $95 that's just sitting there doing nothing now. And it allows Google to use that remaining budget from that campaign to put it into the other one. So you don't have to figure out on your own and make these guesses of how much budget should I be putting in these campaigns. Google will do that for you. And it makes it much easier. You don't have to worry about it.
I think the thing that really matters here that you want to think about when you're thinking about shared versus not shared is, does it matter? Does it matter how much budget we spend in area one versus area two, or that's campaign true. One versus yeah. campaign two? Or does it not? Because the better you can do at letting Google run without constraints, the better it's going to perform. You have to give it the right constraints at the right time. And if this is a constraint not worth having, then why do it? Because mm-hmm. you could have campaign one that has tons of ability, like there's tons of people searching, and therefore you're going to run into a cap on your budget. Whereas on that same day, campaign number two, there were just less people searching mm-hmm. and it ends up under budget. And why basically cut one off and then underspend on the other one when you can let it even yeah. out? I'm also going to play devil's advocate and then prove what an idiot my devil's advocate self is. Because what a lot of people would say is, your example, let's say I have $100. How do I know how much goes to one versus the other? 25, 75, whatever the case is. They would say, I'm just going to adjust that according to the performance of the campaigns. I'm going to invest more in the campaign that works better. I would argue if you're looking at it that way, then you're thinking about it wrong, because it's not about allocating more budget where it works. It's about tuning bids and then letting Google do that for you.
Yep.
So if you have better results with one campaign versus another, that needs to be adjusted in your bidding, not necessarily in your budget. And the best thing that you can do is bid true to value, and then give Google the full reins to do whatever it wants with the budget within the constraints of bidding true to value. Because then the thing that you fix is your return on investment. And the thing that's variable is how much spend goes one place versus another, rather than having a variable return on investment, but a fixed spend. I hope that's not like confusing, but it's a weird concept, because it's so different from how any other marketing channel works. But if you're really good at bidding, almost nothing else matters.
Yep.
And the better we can do at just being really clear about what we communicate to Google is valuable to us, and then giving it as few constraints as possible to work within that, the better. Mm-hmm. And shared budgets are a great tool for that.
Yeah. And I think even if you're not good at bidding, it helps to just make up for what you might not really know about your market and how much money you should put into a campaign or not. And I think a big reason a lot of people don't use it is because they just don't know about it. It's not necessarily something that's really advertised or is clear in Google that is an option, but it's just right there. You go in settings, shared budgets, and you can create a little budget for all of your campaigns and it'll just share it among everything else. So I love it. I'm a huge promoter of the shared budgets. I think there's very few reasons not to use it. So that's simple recommendation. Utilize those shared budgets when you can.
I love it. That's all that we have for settings. And that's all we have for this entire series about PPC. So we're going to have to find something else to talk about now, but hope it was valuable for whoever's listening, and I will see you next week.